All right, let's welcome our speaker. Our speaker tonight is Steve L.
Hey, my name's Steve. I'm from Costa Mesa, not originally, but that's where we drove from tonight. And December is apparently Orange County month for the up here coming to speak, so I'm glad to be here. I'm really, it's kind of special that Juan would ask and trust me with, doing something like this. So that means a lot to me. And it's nice to be in a room with David over here heckling. I miss that. So it makes me feel right at home. And, I love him a ton. He said a lot of really cool things, and, they've stuck with me. So if you hear him, I'll just nod at you because that's where I got him. One of the things he said that I always remember is I don't want to be a big deal in an anonymous program, And so, as small and humble as I can be, I just look over there and say, you be as big as you want to be. And, but I'm good. Anyway, first, I really want to thank my wife for coming with me tonight. That's really cool to get to say that. She, I think you slept in a little bit today, but she usually gets up at 5 and goes to teach school. And I picked her up from school at about 3:34 today so we could drive up here and go have dinner and do this. And, that's pretty cool to have that kind of support nowadays. And wasn't something I was expecting to have after a while. I also have to say hi to all the guys at Tuesday night Laguna Beach men's meeting, 7:30, where I've been going for quite a while. And I told them they'd all be here with me. And so if they've been digging on your CDs I bring back when I come up here. And it's really cool to kind of pollinate back and forth the ideas and new ideas. I wish we had tapes because you guys would love them. We have our thing. I don't know if it's made it up here. We have a thing that's called never pass up an opportunity, keep your mouth shut. So if you're ever in a situation where you don't know what to do, now you do. I started in this program a while ago, and it was a bad day, so I really don't remember when it was. I kind of picked it when Casey and I first met. She was asking, and we were just him and Han, and I kind of went back somewhere around April 90. And I usually never say that because of the aforementioned big deal. And, all it means is I've been to a few more meetings than some people. It doesn't mean I was any better. It took me a long time to get this program. I was voted least likely to succeed for the decade of the 90s. And a good portion of the 2000s, But I kept coming back, and that's what it takes, I mean, I made friends here. And, went to our men's workshop, 12-step workshop in... We were in Pacific Palisades, I think it was called, and then they switched over to Malibu, and I've been doing that for quite a while. And it's the stuff I've learned outside of the meetings that's really stuck with me as well, the friends I've made and the stories I've heard on a little more casual basis and the people I've been privileged to help or have helped me. And for that I'm really grateful. That meeting I go to is, I think this year, this April, it's gonna be 25 years it's been going. And it's got a small percentage of the guys are in the other program. And I won't tell who, because I don't know all of them. We really do a good job of keeping their anonymity. I just happen to know a lot of them on a personal basis, and you find out things. But, we keep it simple. And so I'm grateful for those guys, because I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't have the life I have without those guys. And so for that, I'm really grateful. Anyway, I got to Al-Anon one crazy day. I went to the hospital, and I thought I was having a heart attack, and I was probably, that was before I knew that getting divorced and things causes heart attack symptoms. Now I know what it is, but I think I'd go anyway just to be on the safe side. But I went in, and the doctors checked me in, as they usually say to me when I finally check into a hospital, they say, you have symptoms for about 9 things. But you don't have enough of any of them to have any one of them. So they're usually confused. And then the guy says, what's going on in your life? This guy said a long time ago. And I said, nothing. Normal day. And he goes, well, tell me about your normal day. Well, I got fired. I'm getting divorced. My wife froze the bank accounts. And I went on through about 8 things. And he looked at me just like people look at us in horror, why don't you get it? I didn't get it till a while ago. But anyway, I ended up, I still blew it off. And I went and I pulled out of my neighborhood and got in a car wreck. A girl was coming down a hill and I saw her coming, but I did something I usually never do. I stepped on the brakes. Usually I'm on the gas. And I stopped to give her opportunity to go around me. And she panicked and went right through me. And I hit my head on both sides of the car and it got pretty wrecked up. And, I had a neck brace and my head swelled up and things. And, I said, well, I guess that's a good sign. And so I had a neck brace on and I pulled my sweater up around it so nobody would notice. And I went into this funky church that was in a warehouse where there was a meeting and there were no windows and I could hear people laughing behind the door, but really didn't want to go in, And I went in anyway, and I stayed at that particular meeting for a while. And I've been in Laguna Beach at that men's meeting ever since. And as I said, I'm grateful to be a member of that. I ended up, that divorce happened, that first marriage I was in. It came about when I'd moved away from the girl I was dating and moved down to San Diego. She came to visit, and like a good Al-Anon, I let her stay at my house. And, not too long later, I found out I had a son on the way. And I know how that happens now. I don't think I did back then, but, I was getting a grip on it. It's amazing how naive I was about a lot of things. I ended up getting married because that's what you do. She moved down, we bought a house in Mission Viejo, and I lived there for a while, and we did that for about 8 years. And I faked it with every tool I had. I had a great job. I was racing cars back then, little sports car stuff that I'd done before we got married, and it looked like a little postcard, right? And but we were kind of living different lives. She did the horse thing, and I'd go support that, and when I'd go out to Riverside to race, I'd take my 3-year-old son with me and she'd stay out with the horse. And that worked out good for us too, actually. But that marriage came to an end and I'm grateful. I really don't know what happened. I know that she quit her job one day, came home, said she was going to school, and I could deal with it. And that was during one of those early late 80s economic little shuffles we were having in the country. And it didn't sit well, but it was what I was dealt. And then all of a sudden there were a lot of younger people hanging around the house and study groups, and she wasn't around a lot. And I told her that wasn't working for me. And I guess I scared one of them. And it was probably one of the few times I scared anybody. But I was trying that day. And she told me the guy was really uncomfortable. And I go, well, you ought to be. He's over at my house, having a one-on-one study group with my wife, I said, I think something's odd about that. But as usual, when you come from an alcoholic mixed-up kind of family, somebody could tell you the sky is purple, and you go, well, okay, if you say so, I'll go check. I might be wrong. I don't know. And I let that go for a while, but I left. The mistake I made was that the minute I walked out of the door, I think I went to a payphone or something and called another girl I'd met and started that. There was no downtime. It was right in. And that was drama from the get-go. And I did that drama for 6 years before the infinite wisdom of getting married to solve it came into play, and so we did that. And I survived that. Now, the common denominator between both of these wives was that neither of them were alcoholic, but they'd both grown up in alcoholic homes. So if you're an alcoholic here or somebody in your family is blaming you for everything and saying you're the bane of their existence, we'll take a break tonight because I'm not on your case. My focus is, my life has been really affected by people who don't drink, by people who've been around people who drink, by people, it was said really clearly up here, control, manipulate, know what's best for everybody, know where you need to go, when to go, what to do. I have a saying, if you're grabbing it out of somebody's hands, you're not helping them. You know, let them finish what they were doing. You know, everybody gets to make a mistake. I've learned to do that here. And so that's kind of where I go. That's what I try and do differently. I try and not be the crazy non-alcoholic in the family. And I wanted to fix whatever they had going on. I knew I could do that. I mean, I had some skills. I didn't think a lot of myself some days, but I had a lot of skills. My sister calls me a Renaissance guy, I guess, because I know how to use tools or something. I like it, but it sounds weird. So I just thought I could help them. I mean, what else can you say? They gave me a list of things to do. If I take care of everything, you're going to be happy, and we can just get back to what we were doing. You know, well, for me, it was getting back to racing my car, or raising my son, or doing Little League, or whatever it was. Just not paying attention to somebody who's such a squeaky damn wheel in the house. And I missed a key point that we have in the program, which is letting other people embrace the consequences of their actions. You know, I just didn't get that memo early on. And, you know, the marriages, those first two marriages, just so you know, Casey is my current wife, and she has nothing to do with any of these stories I'm telling you right now. She was worried you'd think she was the alcoholic. But I'm not either. We're two Al-Anons. And that works best for me. I'm not attracted to really loud noises. So I'm pretty good with that. The reason I'm not attracted to loud noises, and Casey couldn't hear me talk about for the first year we were going out, is because I grew up with my mom in a country club being the center of attention. This was a, I forget what the order they used to say it. It was swimming, tennis, and polo at our club up in Atherton, up in Northern California. So there was a lot of blue blazers and gray slacks. And she would come in her best Rowan and Martin's laugh-in mini skirt and high boots and platinum hair. And my wife, my mom was really beautiful. She was like 5 foot tall. And she had three sons. And she went off the deep end at some point in my life, about seventh and eighth grade. And my dad left at one of those points in eighth grade. And he met up with a secretary from another part of town, and they started another life. About 40 miles from our house. The deal with my mom at the country club is she would come in there with all those people who were really proper, you know, and her parents, my grandparents, were pretty wealthy from old-time San Francisco, and I learned a lot from them. And what I'm trying to tell you is that that first part of my life was really normal. We had some good structure. We learned manners. We learned a lot of different things. We went to school. I had a mom. She taught cooking classes for people. And my dad had a job, and it was really cool, you know. But when that thing blew up, my mom lost it, and my dad hooked up with somebody whose life had been affected by other people's drinking as well. And so all of a sudden, it was like everything went upside down. Why do you want to see that family? Why are you spending time with that family? I don't know, because that's my mom, you know. I mean, what better answer do you need to give? But I would get questioned on it. And so that was the start of my odd behavior. And in that thing, I took the train to school for a number of years, my freshman and sophomore year, so I could finish that out. And then I went to school back in at the other end of town in my junior and senior year. I didn't date in all of high school. It wasn't that I couldn't talk to people. I didn't want to follow through with it. I didn't want to bring anybody home. I didn't want anybody at my home knowing anybody I was going out with. I didn't want anybody to be friends with my friends. You know, I didn't want to hear the stupid stories. I didn't want anybody to meet my mom with her being crazy from the other end of the town. And I didn't want anybody meeting my stepmom either. You know, and so I put off on everything. And I was pretty stunted. Like I said, it was a severe dose of immaturity. But I made it up through that first marriage and into the second one. And much like my childhood, the second marriage is where everything went sideways. The first one was just an inconvenience. It just got to be uncomfortable. And I said, that's enough. You know, I'm going to go. And I packed up and moved to the other side of the neighborhood and started the other one. But the problem with that other one was it was just chaos. There was verbal abuse. There was physical abuse towards me. There's so many stories, and I like to say I could tell you a lot of stories, but they make me look stupid for participating in them. At any given point, I could have got up and walked out. Before I got married, on the second date, I could have left, but I didn't. You know, I was attracted to something. I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. She must be right, but I know how to help when she's wrong, so I'm going to keep working at this. And I did. And like I say, I missed all of my 40s in that marriage, at least. And that was that went on for probably 18 years, start to finish, from when we met to the end. But I kept going to Al-Anon the whole time I was there, and I kept learning skills. And I said, it was Thanksgiving some years ago, 11 years ago, I think it was, when I got arrested. And I got arrested for spousal abuse. Except I was the one who got abused. I don't know how I ended up in jail, but it was the way it went down. I think I even took the fall some days because I don't remember anything about it except for having a bunch of shit thrown at me, taking two giant steps towards her. She fell backwards over a coffee table onto the sofa. I said, I don't want to be any part of this. I'm leaving. And by the time I got to the front of my itty-bitty little house, there was a policeman there. And I said, wow, this is like a bad CSI. And that was Thanksgiving in the Newport Beach jail. I am a hardened criminal, I want you to know. I was all alone in the Newport Beach jail on Thanksgiving with my socks inside out for 4 hours. And it was freezing cold in there. And my friends from Al-Anon got me out. And I stayed with them, and I lived in a trailer storage yard for 3 months because I was no way I was going back. Even though I was asked to come back, I finally got smart in that little jail cell. And I said, you know, the best investment I have is in me. I keep putting all this effort into other people, and it doesn't pay off. I better start working for myself. And that's when things started adding up. I'd heard all the slogans. I'd done steps. I'd worked with my sponsor, who I love to death. I'd done all that stuff, but there was just something missing. And about that time, he had one other comment. He says, if you keep doing what you're doing, I don't know what I can do to help you. And, you know, I was like an eye-opener there. That's like a hair. Oh, you guys used to call it a haircut? And got it right down to the scalp. So I had to start doing it differently. My stepson ended up running away from that house, and he lived with me in the trailer for a month. That was pretty cool. That was pretty unique. I had a letter from my... I usually don't talk a lot about this, but it's kind of making me laugh today. It was a 36-foot Airstream. Not an Airstream, it was called an Avion. It was like an Airstream. And we were in a storage yard on the back bay of Newport Beach. So, I mean, it's pretty nice real estate right there. You know? Except I'd left a home on the peninsula. So, I mean, I was doing okay, but I stayed there. My stepson came to live with me for a month, as I said. I had to contact his dad overseas to make sure he knew where he was and that he was safe. I had a letter from my brother-in-law saying it was okay I had him so that I wouldn't get arrested for kidnapping because I didn't need a second offense. And we did that for a while, and I didn't go back I got an apartment and stayed there for a year, so it was probably a year and a half. And he wanted to complete his Eagle Scout thing, and I'd done that with my first son, my oldest son. And so I felt a little obligation. And by then I had enough of a sense of self that I thought I could go back. My landlord was tearing down my house on the peninsula to put in a swimming pool. Pretty nice real estate there. So I said I didn't have a place to go. So I moved back for about 3 months. After about 3 days, I knew I'd made a mistake. And it started coming back. The same thing started coming back. Not the physical stuff. That never, ever came back, thank God. I knew better than to participate or to even be there when things got that tense. I just knew it wasn't important what we were arguing about. It was so not important. So I went back for a while, and it didn't work out. So I ended up saying, look, if I am the root cause of all your problems in your life, then I'm going to remove myself because you won't fire me, and I'm going to go. And so I ended up getting another place, and we kind of reverse dated right out of it. Until I didn't see her for 9 months. And after that point of time, my life was really on hold. And I said, I went on a long motorcycle ride up to Northern California. And I said to myself and my sponsor, I said, when I get back, I need to have an answer. I gotta push myself to have an answer. Am I gonna continue this kind of ambiguous life, or am I gonna quit leave? And on the way back, going through Malibu, I just said, you know, I've had a great time. We've been gone for a week. It's been a blast. We rode 1,200 miles. everybody's safe. And we got to do it. And you know what was funny? I finally did something that was good for me, is I didn't have to meet anywhere. I didn't have to face-to-face talk to this person. I just called them up and said, you know what? I haven't seen you in 9 months, but we got to finish it. And that's the way I handled it. And you know what? I don't have any regret for doing that. I'd done the right thing so many times in my life that I kind of err the other way sometimes nowadays. Not to the point of being rude, but just to the point of taking care of myself instead of how other people are going to see me for what I have to do for myself. That started an interesting journey right there. My oldest son had grown up in that relationship since he was 7. Her son was 6 when I met them. They'd both gone through high school, and I'd completed my mission. You know, I worried about those guys sometimes. And as I said, we were both in Al-Anon. You know, we look good in Al-Anon. And, you know, one of my friends on the way back there has been here through this whole story, so it's pretty cool to have that credibility. I got out, and I just didn't know what to do. My sponsor, I was worried he was going to say I was on dating restriction. I'm not a good dater. I mean, I'm a good dater. I'm not a good asker, right? We were joking about it one night at dinner. One of the guys said, are you putting Steve on dating restriction until he gets this all figured out? And he goes, hell no. He sat on the sidelines so long, I don't care what he does. And I wasn't ready. I knew I wasn't ready in my heart. And I'd done enough on myself to know that it was time to just take a break and normalize. And I kept doing things around my house, and I'd watch TV, and I'd fix up my house, and I'd keep it super clean, and I'd do all the things that I'd want to do. Went to a ton of meetings. I started going to a meeting every day, if not two, because I just love you guys. I wanted to be in the company of people who didn't judge me, you know, and if they did, they had a sponsor they could call to, right? So I let it go like that, you know? And, you know, my friends were encouraging me to do stuff, and sometimes they'd sneak a girl along on one of the rides, you know, and I'd be like, well, who's that? Oh, that's a friend of so-and-so's. Yes. And I was not buying, you know. I get invited to barbecues. I'm not making any purchases. I shop too quickly, you know. So I took that break. And then I just started having some fun with it. Where am I going to go? Well, how am I going to do this? Oh, there's some ladies at some of the meetings that are okay. And I finally had this brilliant idea. I need to just start talking to people. I'm already trying to figure out, you know, we're 3 months in this relationship. I haven't even picked who I want to talk to yet. You know, and the reason I tell this story and this part of the story and a lot of my story is because this is what happened growing up in that home. I didn't have to do an intervention. I've been asked to do them. I kind of laugh and say, whatever. And I'll support anybody doing anything. My mom's been in a home since I was... I don't know how long she's been at home. She's been at home for at least 20 years in a convalescent hospital kind of place. And that's where they put her because she went off the deep end with her part of the story, with prescription meds eventually and shock therapy at the state hospital and everything. My grandmother loved my mom so much that she would do anything for her, the best doctors, the best everything, and she never got an opportunity to fix herself. And she just was eventually broken. So, you know, that's where she's been. And my dad's had his own life a few miles from me, but we don't see each other a lot. But I have a great family. But my life in Al-Anon has been the recovery from people who were upset with other people's drinking, who were affected by other people's drinking. And I had to get to that point. So to be 50 years old or 51 and ask somebody out eyeball to eyeball for the first time and wait for their response, not the, well, we ought to have coffee or something, you know, not one of those or ending up in the same place or all the little subversive ways I could make this happen without actually having to put anything on the line. You know, nowadays people just click on the email and ask somebody and they're like, well, there's a commitment. And so I had to start learning something to do it differently. And like I said, I was going to some of the meetings. I started talking to some people and I got some good help from some of the guys about talking to people and leaving and not making a big deal about it. You don't need to make any plans. And I you know, it was really helpful. It was really helpful. And then I went out a few times with a gal from up in south part of Long Beach up there, you know. And then she sent me an email. It was like 70 pages long. If you know what I mean on an email, when it gets so far, you got to scroll. And some started out with "you're a stalker" or something. And I got like three sentences into this thing, and I started laughing my butt off because it was like, oh my God, where are you? Thank goodness that's over. You know, that's a sleeping dog I'm going to leave alone, you know? And I showed it to one of my friends, and he was like, oh my God. And he said, well, you dodged one there. And I said, well, that's the first one. And so I just kept going to meetings, you know, because that's what you do when you don't know what else to do. And you know, there was another betweener story in there, and I'll get over it. I'll skip on that one. Because I was smart enough not to. Actually, I got to tell a little bit of it. I saw this smile because, you know what? Our life comes up on TV. You know what? We had a situation the other day where our youngest son, he's 14, cut his leg open, had to get It was stitches on his shin from all the way from the bone out to the outer layer, right? And he was being, you know what? I didn't have a mom after I was 10, so everybody gets mommy to me because I've been taking care of myself so long that I have to like, it's okay. It's a good thing to have a mom, you know, let her go. And she does a great job. And so anyway, we were just laughing back and forth that she thought I was maybe pointing out that she might be mommying a little too much. And so the next day, this TV show comes on. This guy's 45 years old, and he's being a pain because he's got a cold. And his coworker says, he's nothing when his mommy's not around. She said, don't wind that DVR up. I don't want to hear it. But I wasn't even in a relationship. It was a situation that I was negotiating. And, and it got to a point where I said, I can't do that. Because I don't want to have to tell somebody, I may meet somebody down the road, and there's no way I'm going to have to explain to them that I'm married, but I'm not. If you get my drift. And I said, I'm going to do that. And you know what? It was supported, and I got help from that, and I let that go. And it was disappointing. It didn't go a different way. But you know what? God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I'm grateful for that. Everything that's happened in my life, I'm grateful for every bonk on my head, every stub, every stitch, every broken one of seven fingers I've broken, I am grateful for because they have directed me to this podium and the life I'm having right now. And I am so grateful for that. I used to go to a speaker meeting at, anyway, to finish that story, we're watching TV and some episode comes on. And the girl is trying to, somebody's setting somebody up, and she figures this guy's a little aloof and she wants to find out what's up with him. Her partner looks him up on the internet, finds out he's married. And she's going, why is this guy trying to date me? He's married. He calls her, they're gonna meet for coffee. He has to tell her he's kind of married, but he's not really married. And we looked at each other and I said, see, I didn't want to end up there. I knew better. And so I got out of that one. But I used to go to a meeting at Hoag Hospital, and it was an AA speaker meeting when I was new. And 600 people or something there. And, you know, everybody put their keys on the seats about 3 in the afternoon, right? My favorite night was the night some new secretary came in and picked them all up and said, if you lost anything, it's in a box up here on the stage. That's a take action guy. And I just think of those things, you know. I don't do them all the time. But, you know, the person, they'd speak and they'd tell their story, and it ended at 10, right? But it'd be like 5 of 10 and they weren't sober yet. And I said, I don't think this guy's going to get sober tonight. You know, it might just be all story. And so I usually like to tell in the beginning, and I think I gave you a good impression about how grateful I am my wife's here with me tonight. The life I live today, you know, I'm not perfect, and I'm not, I'm so much more who I want to be today than I've ever been before. If you're new, again, I was least likely to succeed. And just be kind to yourself. I met Casey at a Sunday night meeting at Mariners Church. I'm just talking to people. And I think the first night she came over to talk to me, I was busy waiting to say hello to another friend. And I really didn't answer her question. She asked me very well about something I'd shared that night. And so 2 or 3 weeks later, I found her and I just said, you know, I felt bad ever since then that, you know, she looked like she was hurting when she asked me the question. I just went back and said, I didn't give you a very good answer to your question when I saw you last. And she had this look on her face and she was trying to remember what she asked me. I found out later and I gave her the answer and that was it. And I told her, you know, we it went maybe 3 months, 3-4 months or something, and I just kept going to the meeting because that's why I was going. I wasn't going to meet somebody. I was going to mind my own business and be whole myself. My brother-in-law had told me, why did you try and make somebody happy who couldn't be happy themselves? And I said, that makes a point to me. And one of the guys at the workshop one weekend, we were up in Malibu, he said, Steve, what are your requirements in somebody you want in your life? And I said, well, you know, they got to wear a dress. And that didn't mean, I'm not talking about guy or girl, I'm talking about I wanted a girl in my life that would dress like, you know, not, I want to say like my mom, but I just mean there's a certain aspect to not marry another guy that was a girl, if you know what I mean. And so he laughed at me, and you know, I came up with like three things, and he said, well, how about somebody who's available? And like David said, I go, best, you know? And I said, oh, that's really profound, man. And so that was when I noticed that somebody was trying to get my attention, right? Because I was trying to ignore her for, you know, a little bit. And so I went up to her and I said, don't leave before the end of the meeting. I have to tell you a story. And so she waited for me and I told her, I said, every time I come over to talk to you at the Sunday night meeting, these women come and surround us, and I feel like they think I'm some kind of predator or something. Is there something wrong? And she goes, no, I think they just want to hear what you have to say. I went, who knew? I said, as long as we're good, that's all I care about. You know, I mean, but I never thought about the other. And so I said, maybe we should go talk some other time. Now, the funny part of this story is we had two first dates on the same day. I asked her to just go out and talk one day after, on a Saturday after she got out of a meeting. And I got there and I did what I was going to do. I talked to her. And when we were getting done and she was going to, I think, a Little League game afterwards, and she said, I got to get running, but you mentioned that if we didn't meet here, we were going to meet where your friends were playing music. And I went, yeah. She goes, well, what time is that? And I went, hey, now wait a minute. I said, I think she wants to go out. I'm pretty smart. She's way smarter. And so we did. We went out. We met later, and we went to a speaker meeting in the Canyon Club because that's what she did on Saturday nights, and she wasn't willing to change that at that time. And you know what? I appreciated that, and I was willing to compromise with that. And we went and had a little food afterwards, and then we went to the seediest little dive bar in Tustin to watch my friends play music. And I said, the place is scary. She said, I don't scare easy. And I said, okay, you look like you might, but okay. Because it scared me when I went in there. But today I changed jobs after 18 years, which was kind of scary. But the guy who I was replacing said that you know, nothing risk, nothing gain. And I was so comfortable in the old job, you know? It was just the same old thing. But I said, oh, this is my last dysfunctional relationship, this job. And so I had to leave it, and I went to this one. We got married a year and change ago in August, and it's the whole time, every moment we've ever been together has been wonderful. I didn't think I was going to get that opportunity. When I was negotiating that other contractual deal, and people didn't want to go out, and people didn't like who Steve was, but I did. I was starting to like myself so much, and nobody else was. And I'm going, well, this sucks. And you know, that's another thing David said. Is there anybody in their last 30 days of Al-Anon? My 14-year-old just came out of my mouth. That hit me like a ton of bricks because I was ready to quit. I'd been coming since the early 90s. I'd tried all this stuff. I was feeling better about myself, but the world didn't like me. And I said, you know what? I think maybe it's time to hang this thing up. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I have lots of friends who aren't in program. This isn't my whole life. You know, I enjoy that kind of, all I want to do is be normal. All I want to do is fit in. I didn't know it was up to me, but I figured it out. But I was in those days, and that meant a lot hearing that one day when David was speaking. And so I knew I had to just completely 100% turn myself over to being myself. And when we were going out, Casey one day mentioned that she was going to a church series on relationships. She said, would you like to go? Well, as my friend Jimmy says, I thought I was going to blow up if I ever stepped into a church other than for a meeting, you know. And I didn't know anything. I've been kind of, we ditched church when we were kids, you know, so I don't know a lot of stories, and I don't know a lot of, I didn't know a lot of what was in that was in the book at the time. And she asked me to go, and I said, yeah, I'd like to be in a good relationship. I'd go. So we started going there, and she's so patient with me. She's sitting up in the back row, about 8 million seats up, and I'd lean over and go, why are they praying and asking for stuff? Don't they know God's going to give us exactly what we need if we're smart enough to just wait?
Sure.
And she'd go, well, they're not talking to everyone, honey. You know that. And she's so kind whenever I would ask her a question about my view of organized religion, you know, until I found out the church is people and religion is a building, you know. And the people, when we go for our workshop, tell us that our Al-Anon men's workshop is the kindest. Isn't that what he says? He says, we are the most spiritual, kind people who come through that place all year long. And they enjoy having us there. And I like that, you know. And I like everything that goes on in our house. You know, we look like an episode of Hoarders right now. We moved. My brother moved over to the condo Casey had before we got married, and we moved over back to the house I had before we got married. And there's stuff everywhere. And she does an awesome job of decorating when I give her space to work. And I don't care what color anything is. I do care. I just don't have a preference. You know, because she does a nice job doing it. I've been unpacking boxes of stuff I've been dragging behind me for 25 years and not wanting to unpack because I'm not settled. I've got an aquarium for sale on Craigslist if anybody needs a 55-gallon aquarium, acrylic. And I've had it for 18 years, and it's never had a drop of water in it. She is so patient with me. I did want to keep it, because someday, but I gave in, and I said, I'll get rid of it. Anyway, it's not a big choice. It has really been a gift to have a life that is so calm that I can hear you talk. It's been a gift to have a life that is so calm that I can hear my kids talk, and to accept love from another person without worrying about what they think or what they're doing or what they want or any of that stuff. It is just a gift. Having said that, Casey offers that to me, but it's my job to take it. And there's the hard part. I have to walk away some days when she's having a moment and just say, you know what, our deal is she'll tell me when she needs to tell me. And I'm not supposed to make up stuff because I can do that really well. The government should have hired me for war scenarios and things. I have so many problems in my life right now, and it's a gift. I was talking to David at the break about that. I have a water heater I found out is 25 years old. Boom! It's going to go any day. We're getting a new one. We have a front window that needs to be replaced. Our son has it's a grade point average that's so small, it might be metric. And you know what I know today, and I know I got to finish this soon, what I know today is this is life. This is normal life. It's not a drama. This is not my purpose for coming to Al-Anon. I am my own qualifier. You know, I am the reason I'm here. All those other people are gone, or I've put them in little boxes. And not dead, but I just... Thank you. Sounded like I was a hitman or something. I thought about it. I don't want to end up in Newport Beach jail again. But I have that life. And I really enjoy it. And the one thing I want to tell you is that when I finally made that decision and let go of what other people think of me and knew it was none of my business and do it differently and just be willing to be happy myself, whatever, and life started going well, I looked back across the street and I said, what was so hard about that? Why was I resisting that for so long? It looked so easy. I always had to know the outcome before I started the journey because I wasn't allowed to make mistakes. You know, nobody would say they did that to me, but it's the way it felt by the comments, you know. So if you're a Al-Anon person in the house and you have a lot of opinions about the way your family rolls, you know, it's worth thinking about. You know, it's not just the alcoholic that causes the trouble. The lasting effects in my life and people I've been around, and somebody mentioned Alateens before, we've been privileged to sit in on a couple meetings and to hear, you know, it's not always the alcoholic they're talking about, you know? And somebody said that they ought to put a mirror in Al-Anon literature, you know, so we could look at ourselves. Anyway, you know, thank you guys for letting me come up and tell a few stories. I really appreciate it.